Hi, this is Circe Olson Wessner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family, and this is our podcast, Host Nation Hospitality. I'm very pleased to be speaking with Navy spouse, world traveler, and author Julie Tully. She's the author of Dispatches from the Cowgirl. That's a really interesting sounding book. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Circe.
So we met via our mutual friend, Karen Tram, who was the first guest on this podcast, the Host Nation Hospitality podcast. And so Karen sent me this email that kind of read like a teaser. Meet writer Julie Tully, author of Dispatches from the Cowgirl, winner of the IBPA, which is the Independent Book Publishing Association, Gold Medal Award and MWSA Silver Medal winner and Navy mom and expat and Navy wife and a lot more that I don't even know about. And that was the thing right there. Like a lot more that I don't even know about.
Well, Karen is an absolute gem. She's phenomenal. We actually don't know each other in person. We only know each other virtually, and we came together as writers who shared some common friends. And the funny thing is, you know, it's so typical of the military lifestyle. We both looked at each other when we were on a Zoom call and said, how did we not know each other before? But she was very kind to say all those things.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I've worked with many people that I've never met, but we've been friends for decades. As a matter of fact, I just went to Paris to meet with somebody who I've known forever, but I've never actually met them in person. And so we met in Paris. So yeah.
It's the beauty of the modern age.
It is. So I feel like I know a little bit about you because you and I are on some of these mutual Facebook groups, and I've seen some of your posts and, you know, pictures of your book and, you know, so I thought I know you, but I love how she said a whole lot more stuff that she doesn't know about. And so I want to learn some more about that stuff. And then of course I can share it with her so she could know it too. So let's just jump right in. Okay.
Okay. Fire away.
All right. So I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. We're going to learn a lot about your life as a Navy spouse, your writing and anything else. So let's start with your childhood. Where'd you grow up?
So I'm a native Californian. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Northern California in a very small town called El Dorado, which is just a couple of miles from where gold was discovered. When I grew up there, the population was 750 people.
Mm. Mm. So what did you do as a, what was your family? Were they ranchers or?
Yeah, so I grew up on a cattle ranch, an honest to goodness cattle ranch in outside of El Dorado. I am the part of the fifth generation of my family's cattle ranch, and I grew up in what many people would say is like the idealistic American life if you were not an American looking inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, small town girl, grew up on a cattle ranch, grew up in a rural part of America. And it was just, it was at that time, and even now that I look back, it was just a phenomenal way to grow up. And when I was young, I thought there couldn't be anything better than the life that I had then.
Well, I imagine that growing up on a ranch or a farm requires a fair amount of discipline, and you had chores and, you know, and so you had a lot of discipline growing up. And of course, writing has a lot of discipline, and being part of the military life, would you say that you're pretty organized and disciplined?
So, well, let's say, I can't wait for my mom to listen to this podcast because she's gonna laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. When I need to be, I'm very type A.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other half of me is almost this like bohemian wild child, very disorganized. But growing up the way that I did on a ranch, yeah, there's a ton of discipline. Yes, there are chores. Yes, there are things that have to be done at a certain time frame, at a certain time, in a certain way. And so that discipline was always there. But at the same time, growing up as I did on this ranch, I also learned that there's so much that we don't have any control over. And so, in many ways, that lifestyle is like living in organized chaos at all times, because you realize there are so many things that you can't control. You can't control the seasons. You can't control the animals. They will do what they want to do. And so, growing up in that environment, I learned, yes, there are certain things that I can be and that I can, that I can keep myself going and focused, but at the same time, to understand that I need to allow that space for the chaos to be in there, and how to kind of roll with the punches.
Well, the next question I was going to ask you was, what important life lessons did you take away from your childhood? But obviously, you have to roll with the punches. Yes, animals are going to do whatever. Are there any other life lessons that you remember, you focused on from your childhood that you've carried through to your adulthood?
Oh, so many. The thing about that world that I came from, the agricultural world and the ranching community, especially where I grew up, is that you are truly part of a community. And there's good sides and there's bad sides to that. One side was, when you grow up in a small town, everybody knows who you are. So the life lesson was always to remember who you are, and that everybody sees you. So to go forward, understanding that who you are and what you do impacts others and impacts yourself. And so I've always been very aware of who I am and what people see from the outside if they don't know me personally. The other things, rolling with the punches. That's the biggest life lesson that I took away from it, because we had good years, we had bad years, we had drought, we had abundance of rain, we had years where animals were sick, and you thought, how am I ever going to get through this? But it's like that old saying, how do you eat an elephant? You eat it one bite at a time. And that was the life lesson that I got from my childhood, was nothing is really just like in that moment. It is a process that goes over years. And so patience and rolling with the punches and knowing that things are always going to change, that served me well.
I was going to say that sounds exactly like what all the military brats would say. We were representing our family. We needed to be resilient. We needed to roll with the punches. So yeah. Okay,
It
well,
was great training for being a spouse.
yeah, I guess so. So I read somewhere, it was probably on your website, that you dreamed of going to Africa when you were a kid. Did your family, I know ranching is like 24/7, but did your family have a chance to travel a lot when you were a kid, or were you just an armchair traveler through books and movies?
No, I was lucky enough to travel just a little bit when I was a child, but never as the entire family. If we did trips as a family, it was usually, someplace within driving distance of where we were from, just simply because the ranch couldn't be left alone for that long time. But my love of travel, but and truly my love of Africa, came from watching shows when I was a little kid and reading books. I mean, I grew up with Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, and from the very early, days of watching that and just seeing these vast expanses and beautiful pictures of a continent that was so far away. And then I read National Geographic, and Out of Africa became a movie at that time when I was a child. Shaka Zulu was a mini series, and those, for some reason, I wanted to travel everywhere. I truly, enjoyed reading and learning about anything, but Africa captured my imagination. And part of it was because in some ways it was like my life in ranching. It was big, vast spaces and animals and people working hard, working with the land and with the animals. And I think that that was part of what captured it, but also that part that it was so, in my mind, a 180 from what I was living.
Well, so shifting a little now, how did you meet your husband? And did he come to the ranch?
Oh my gosh, yes, actually, yes, perfect. So my dear friend that I grew up with, like I said, we're from a very small town, and if people went away to school when they graduated from high school, they usually picked one of the bigger schools that was near us in California. Every once in a while, we would have somebody go to an East Coast college or something, but most people stayed around. But my dear friend received an appointment to go to the Naval Academy. And so for the 4 years that she was at the Naval Academy, it was her mission to find me a boyfriend. And I, much to my chagrin, because the entire time I said, I have nothing in common with anybody that would ever be a sailor. I'm a rancher's daughter. I'm going to stay in agriculture. I'm going to live this life. Most likely I will marry a rancher's son, or I will be somewhere adjacent, but why sailors? And she said, no, I'm going to find you a guy. So her final, their first year, their senior year at the Naval Academy, she had told me about this guy, and she said, hey, he's coming out to visit. It was just after Christmas. She said, he's coming out to visit, him and a couple of other friends from the academy, and we're going to go to San Francisco for the day, and we want to take you along. I said, sure, whatever, that's fine. And so they drove to my family's ranch to pick me up to go to San Francisco, and the one of the guys that walked into my family's front room there on the ranch was my future husband. And nicest guy, handsome guy. I thought, oh, he's just a nice guy. I didn't know that when he walked into the room that that was the love of my life.
I can't imagine a friend spending 4 years on a mission to find somebody else. Did she find a husband?
Did. She married a classmate as well. And so
Okay, that's good.
but yeah, no, I told her, I said, it's a fool's errand, but she was persistent, and I'm glad she was.
So when you were first married, well, that must have been quite a culture shock getting into the military life. So what was that like? And did your future husband warn you what to expect about being a military spouse?
So our life is a little bit different. Yes, he did kind of warn me. He said, this is what it's going to be like, but he didn't have a large frame of reference for himself, because being single, all of his friends were single. That really the only people that he knew that were married were, he was a submariner at the time, were, the XO of his boat, or the CO. They were married, but otherwise he was just a single guy, and he's like, well, you're going to get, medical care, and you're going to get this, and you're going to get that. But when we first got married, our first duty station was here in Monterey, California. And he was a student at the Naval Postgraduate School. I happened to have a job right before we got married in the Bay Area of California. So I kept my job, and we moved closer to my job. And so for the first 18 months of our marriage, we were married, but I was not actually part of his everyday military life. I still had my life from before we were married.
So you got to
It
ease
wasn't,
into it. You got to ease
it,
into
well, yeah. And I mean, I can remember, excuse me, this was, pre-9/11. So I didn't even have a military ID card. He said, well, we're going to have to get you enrolled into the system and everything, get you ID card, but it's no big deal right now. So I can remember we got our follow-on orders to move to New London, Connecticut after 18 months, and I had to come to Monterey with him for a day just to get my ID card. And I didn't know anything about how to act, how to do anything. So it really wasn't until we moved to Connecticut a year and a half into our marriage that I truly was immersed into the life of a military spouse.
Well, so you've spent 25 years as a military spouse now, right? You're still active duty, right?
We are. We
Yeah.
are. He will retire next in May of 2025.
Okay. Well, you've already mentioned that you moved to Connecticut. So I imagine you've done a little bit more traveling since then, especially since I'm, the teaser of your book. But so where all have you lived? And like maybe if you want to, I don't know if you do. When you mention each place, you can free associate and give like one or two things that made that place special, or you can do that at the end, whatever. Just where have you lived?
Okay. Well, let's start out. So when we were first married, like I said, we were stationed here in Monterey, California at the Naval Postgraduate School where he was a student. And that was our introduction to marriage, and we fell in love with Monterey. And the irony is he said, ha ha ha, we got one of the best jobs ever. As our first job, we'll never get to come back here.
Right. Well, we
And
tried to
so
go there
enjoy it now, because
too.
we're enjoy it now, we're never coming back. From there we moved to New London, Connecticut, where he was a department head on a submarine. And that was really special. Like I said, that was my introduction truly into military life. In one way though, we arrived there just a month or so before 9/11 happened. And my intro into military life was forever changed by our tour in Connecticut because of that, and has changed our life ever since. But on the very happy side, it's also where our son was born. So our son was born in Connecticut, and then when he was 9 months old, we did the crazy thing of saying, yes, we'll accept orders to an exchange tour. So our next place was the UK. We lived in England for a few years, and that was the place where we began to love working with the international side of our military and cooperation with other militaries. So my husband transferred while we were there in did a lateral transfer into the Foreign Area Officer Community, which was brand new at the time for the Navy. He was assigned as an Africanist, and so the next obvious place that they would place us was Germany. So we moved to Stuttgart, where he helped stand up AFRICOM when it became AFRICOM. We lived in Germany for quite a few years, and that was an amazing place to live. We truly enjoyed our time there. From Germany, we moved to the African continent. We lived in Cameroon. And that was our first taste of Africa. And then we moved to Nigeria. We were there for a couple of years. And then to Djibouti. And Djibouti, we were there for 3 years, and it was incredible. And then our most recent tour before this one was in Naples, Italy. Contrary to what a lot of people think, that was a little bit of a challenge. I know everybody says, oh my gosh, you're in Italy, it must be wonderful. It was one of the more challenging tours that we've had. And then after 18 years overseas, we moved back to the United States in 2022. And like I said, ironically enough, we moved back to Monterey, California, where we are now.
Wow, I mean, you do have like the it's not the who's who of moving, but you really did get a lot of interesting and exciting assignments there.
Yeah, we like to say that we're kind of the unicorns of, especially for the Navy, because of the path that we've taken.
I mean, you don't usually get that many back to back overseas. Well, with all that moving, were you able to make and keep close friendships with other military spouses, or did you just sort of drift away once you PCS'd? I'm not in touch with anybody but one person after our 20-year military career. But so did you have more?
Yes, I've been able to maintain quite a few friendships. As you know, it's never easy. Some of them fell away. Some of them that I imagine that I would stay friends with forever, we've lost touch over the years. But I will say that, for example, when we lived in Connecticut and we were on submarine, the spouses group, the family readiness group that was there, those women, because this was still at a time before submarines were male and female, so it was the spouses at the time were all women. Those women, we became so incredibly close through deployments and other things that happened during that time. We're still incredibly tight. There's, I could today drop a line to those, to any of the women that were part of that group with me, and say, "Hey, I need help," or "I just want to talk." And in a moment, they would be there for me. So yes, I've been able to keep those friendships. I've lucky enough, like I said, we've done a lot of international assignments, and so I have a very dear friend from our time in England who's a spouse of Royal Navy officer, and we are incredibly close, so close in fact that I am the godmother to one of their children. And then throughout our tours in Africa, we were stationed at embassies, and I have many, many very, very close friends from the time there.
Yeah, that's, there is the bond between, especially overseas, you grow friendships a little tighter and a little, faster. When you look back at your life as a military spouse, is there anything you would have done differently, or do you have any regrets about anything?
So, one of my things in for life in general is I have no regrets. I don't believe in regrets. I believe that everything happens for a reason, and that having a regret is saying that you would wish something that has happened wouldn't have happened, and not understanding the ramifications of that. Is are there things that I would have done differently? Perhaps, but now it's at the age and the season of life that I'm in now, I know that even the things that weren't easy, that were difficult, that people would say, "Oh my gosh, why didn't why didn't you do X, or why didn't you do this?" All of those little things put me on a path to be right where I am now. And I, in my mind, the fear of if one of those things had changed, I would not be where I am. So no, I wouldn't change anything.
Okay. So what's one of the best things about being a military spouse?
I love, so I actively mentor the next generation of foreign area officer spouses as they enter this incredible life that they're going to get to lead this part of this community for the military. And I always, one of the first things that I tell them when I meet them, I say, "I am so jealous that you are starting out, that I'm on the tail end now, and you're just beginning. And I am so incredibly jealous of what you have ahead of you. And there will be tough times, and there will be hard times, but it's this." What they need to see is that being a military spouse, you get to do so many things that are so incredible that the average person would never get to do, and that you will have this community behind you that will always be there, and they'll be nodding along and saying, "Yeah, oh, I remember that. Oh, I remember that." And it's just the life that it offers is just incredible. That's my favorite thing about being a military spouse is the life that I've had.
Well, you wouldn't have been able to write a book about living in Africa.
Exactly.
Exactly. So actually, let's talk about Dispatches from the Cowgirl. I haven't read it yet, but I've added it to our museums to buy list. We have quite an eclectic collection of books in our library, over 2,200 books. But the smallest section in our library is that are books written by military spouses. So I'm always excited when I see a new book out by a spouse. And So I definitely am going to put it in there. And, I'm happy to meet you, a new military spouse author. So the full title of your book is called Dispatches from the Cowgirl, a Memoir Through the Looking Glass with a Navy Diplomat's Wife. And immediately I'm so smart. I said, ooh, a Alice in Wonderland reference. But was it an Alice in Wonderland reference?
Oh, 100%, Cersei.
Oh, good.
100%.
I'm smart.
It actually, so yeah, the reference comes from when we actually moved to Africa. As we were moving, I happened to pick up Alice in Wonderland again, after years, decades, and I was reading it as we moved there, and I thought, this is exactly what's happening to me right now is what was happening to Alice. So the reference is true. So when we received our orders to move to Africa, much to the chagrin of our family, because we had already been overseas for 7.5 years, 8 years between England and Germany. And our family said, oh, you're going to come home. You're going to bring your small child home. You're going to move home. And we received orders to move to Cameroon. The first thing that happened when we told family and friends was, why are you guys going to Africa? Why are you going there? Friends would say, why are they sending a cowgirl to Africa? Or other friends would say, why is the Navy sending your husband to Africa? Why are they sending you to Cameroon? And immediately the first thing that came to my mind was, well, I guess I need to tell people about this. And for me, my husband and I were such book nerds that we read about places, we read about everything before we go and do something. And so I thought, I'm moving to a place, this was before social media is what it is now. And we're moving to a place where most people would never even get to visit. It's not really a place where tourists would go. How to best take our family and friends along for the ride and allow them to understand why we are there and to give them a taste of what we were seeing.
Well, that solves my having to ask you about why what inspired you to write it, but that's very cool. So when were you stationed there? What years?
So we moved to Cameroon in February of 2011, and we stayed three back-to-back tours on the African continent, and we left in the summer of 2018.
So when you were writing this, and I know you said, you wanted to let your family and your friends get a taste of what you were experiencing. How did you choose which events to record? And of course, because it's nonfiction, how did you balance including people and events in your book, with considering their privacy or national security or culture or whatever?
So my professional background before I became a military spouse and everything was in public relations and communications. So I've always been a storyteller from a very young age. Going into this life and realizing both my husband and I realizing that we had the opportunity to tell people about the work that we did down there because the work within the foreign area officer community was not even known amongst a lot of our military friends. If they weren't in the community, they didn't even know what we were doing, so let alone the people back home who were civilian. And we thought, well, it's all well and good to tell them, oh, day-to-day stuff that my husband was doing, but what about just the life that we would lead as a military family, at me as a military spouse, what type of life would that be in these unique situations? So I chose to tell stories that were often self-deprecating of, here's Julie learning how to live in a very foreign culture. I chose to tell stories like that where I was usually the butt of my own jokes, or just general stories about what it was actually like to live in those locations day to day. I would purposely be very careful about, I wouldn't write about people unless I had their permission to write about them. And if I didn't have their permission, I would write stories in such a way that, it wouldn't harm them. My husband and I are very, very private people, which, yeah, I know it's ironic. I'm a public relations person. I'm a writer. I wrote a memoir. We are extremely private people. And so that privacy translates in my writing because I'm very hyper conscious of other people's privacy. And then also, we had to think about operational security and everything. So I had to be very selective with what I wrote. At the same time, life in general, there is so much to write about. So I, living in that world in Africa, I was never at a loss of things to write about.
Okay. I struggle with that with the museum. There's this thing about, wanting to share history and then wanting to be respectful of privacy and how does it look and all that. So I understand. So when you wrote Dispatches, you were rapidly turning 40 and wondering, what is my place in the world? And so, what about turning 40 was causing you to ask this existential question?
So we moved our the timing of our move to Africa coincided with I turned 39 right as we arrived. And I had until that point I had had a career. I had had a really good career. But like most military spouses, I've had to walk away from a career, and especially in that time frame, we're talking 20 years ago now almost. I had to leave my career because it was not portable. There were no laws in place to keep me employed with the work that I was doing. I moved overseas, so I left a job, left my that part of my identity behind, had a child, moved overseas, and was living overseas. And for a while it was fine because we were living in England, we were living in Germany, our child was, from a baby to a toddler in the time I had my hands occupied. I didn't have time to think of anything else. But as we started that transition into Africa, here I am, just about 40, watching all of my friends and my peers and my former colleagues advance into their career and hit their strides. And I had a child who was now ready to go off to school and to be pretty independent during the day. And my husband had this fantastic job. And what did I have? And I had lost, for a moment of time, I lost sight of who I was and where I fit into the world. And so it really, I think, in many ways shaped what I saw. And that was the stories that I told that my book grew from these vignettes that I would send home to people. So these were email blog posts, for no better term. I would send these little emails home, and they were incredibly colored by the fact that I was trying to find my place in the world while I was discovering a new place.
Well, that reminds me of there's a German expression called Torschluss panic. And it literally means the gate closing, and it's like a metaphor, the fear of missing something because you're running out of town. So it sounds like you were having that. So when you first arrived to Cameroon, you were trying to figure out what you were going to be doing. I know there was a diplomatic community there. Was your husband, were you guys the only military, or were there more military? Did you have job leads? What did you envision your day going to be like?
So we were part of the embassy. Foreign area officers, one of the big career paths is to work in the embassies around the world. And So we were part of that embassy community, which by default put us in the diplomatic world. There weren't that many military, embassies are guarded by
Marines,
Marines. So there's a very small contingent of Marines that, that live and work at the embassy. And then there's also, depending on what country you're in, there is a very, could be a very small or slightly larger contingent of US military that works in the embassy. So, my husband, just like any other military move, he gets to go and he has his job waiting for him. And our son, he gets to go and he had his school waiting for him. And our the people who sponsored us into the embassy that made our landing slightly softer, they had reached out to me before we even arrived, and she said, "Do you plan to work while you're here?" I didn't know. I didn't know anything about the lifestyle. I didn't know what was coming for me. And I thought I could say yes, but at the same time, in my mind, I was fighting so many things in my mind. There was so much confusion in my mind about who I was and what I was doing that I said, I might want to work, but I don't think I want to work right away. I need to get my feet under me. I need to understand what this world is. And so, I could have worked right away. But I didn't. I kind of I approached going into Africa for the first time. I approached it as I have the luxury and the privilege to be able to just sit and figure out what I'm doing. So I did.
Well, that's good. That's a good way for me to continue the conversation. So you had a sponsor who kind of gave you the soft landing. Was that the person, or did you have a mentor or make a friend that introduced you to more people and to the culture and took you out and showed you where the interesting sites were? Did you have that kind of a thing, or did you have to do it on your own, or?
Well, no, so the one thing that the State Department does really well is that they understand that in throughout the world, when you're posted at an embassy, that you are in a foreign country, even though you're assigned to an embassy, which is a US entity, you are in a foreign country, so that there's a lot of culture shock. And especially in places where they consider them hardship postings, like Africa, they make sure that they assign a sponsor to you to bring you into the embassy to tell you what to expect, how to get your if you have children, how to get them registered in school, what your house is going to be like, where to go shopping. And so it was the embassy's policy to always give you somebody that wasn't part of your world. So our sponsor was State Department, a State Department spouse. And yeah, she took me into Africa for the first time and brought me into that world. And from the very basics of giving me all, the read aheads and everything that I needed to know before we arrived, all the way to making sure that our temporary house that we were staying in when we first landed had groceries for us to eat the next morning and a cup of coffee. And then too, once we were there physically there and got our child into the school, she took me around grocery shopping. She took me to, a ladies' evening to introduce me to some of the other people. And she was the one that took me in and helped me in the day-to-day for a long time. But also the embassy itself. Embassies are designed to make sure that their people can adjust and are happy. And so the embassies will do a lot to say, here we're doing cultural events. Do you want to take a tour and see XYZ? And so I was overwhelmed by generosity, more so than I had ever been in my life, by the generosity of the people that welcomed us into Cameroon. And I took that. That was such a great foundation for us, and I've taken that throughout my life ever since.
What did you discover about yourself that you didn't know prior to moving there?
Gosh, I I am my so my mom always calls me her can-do girl because I'm the youngest of three. I'm the only girl, and I always, growing up on a ranch, I always thought I could do what my older brothers could do, what anybody could do, because darn it, I could. I was tough. And I, like, in the back of my mind, I always knew that, but I didn't really know that. It's, the curse of youth is that you question yourself and your ability to actually adapt and overcome. What I discovered about myself after we moved there that I didn't really know is that I really was that person. I, before then, it was kind of like I would say I was that person, but it was like a veneer that I put on. Sure, I'm that person because everybody thinks I'm that person. I didn't, until we moved to Africa, I didn't realize as a truth that I actually could be that can-do person, and that no matter what was thrown at me, I could figure out a way to move forward.
That's wonderful. That's like, so a lot of people don't quite understand, how much a team military couples or diplomatic couples are, how much important diplomacy is done over dinner parties and collaborative projects and host nation volunteer work and or military spouses stepping in to use skills and talents just to fill voids that are, jobs that aren't, being filled. Did you end up doing a lot of that kind of stuff?
So, yes, absolutely. Before we moved to Africa, my husband had done some TDY, temporary duty assignments, within Africa at embassies. And he said, "Oh my gosh, if we ever get to move to the continent, if we ever get to go there and work, I've seen what we can do as a couple." He had seen other military couples in his time doing these TDYs in Africa who were working together within the diplomatic community, helping each other, the spouse actually helping the active duty service member with their job within the diplomatic world, and from anywhere, attending events with them to hosting them within their home and showing America and basically being a team going in. So that when we got to Africa, when we actually moved to Africa, with my background in public relations, my husband's like, this is it. This is what we are. We're going to go into this as a team. So we actually, to the extent that we could, we worked together during those embassy tours. And anywhere from me simply attending a diplomatic event with him to hosting people within our home to planning events to make sure that we could accomplish any work that he needed to accomplish, with me planning behind the scenes and executing the events. That is what I got to do for all those years in Africa. I was, for the first time, I was actually able and encouraged to work alongside my military husband.
Well, I saw that you were bestowed the honorary title of Kentucky Colonel by the governor of Kentucky. And
Yes.
when I Googled it, it's described as a recognition of an individual's noteworthy accomplishments and outstanding service to our community, state, and nation.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
It was a shock. Both my
Congratulations.
husband, thank you. Both my husband and I were named Kentucky colonels during our tour in Djibouti, where my husband was the senior defense official and defense attaché. At the time, the Kentucky National Guard, well, even currently, the Kentucky National Guard has a bilateral agreement with the Djiboutian government to work with them.
And so my husband was the one who made sure that that relationship could work and that they did programs and trainings and everything together. During that time, though, I would work closely with any of the Kentucky National Guard members that would come in, and I would help them, and I would help my husband with whatever he needed to do to help to get that work forward. So it was lovely when one of their generals was in town toward the end of our time in Djibouti, that he surprised us by thanking us, telling us that we had been named Kentucky Colonels by the state of Kentucky.
That's just a great thing. I love that story. Because I was kind of confused because you didn't mention Kentucky as one of the places you'd lived.
Well, that's
I was wondering what happened.
well,
Wow.
even now when people meet me and somehow it comes up that I'm a Kentucky colonel, they'll say, "That's great, you're from Kentucky," and I'll be, "No, I'm a Californian. I was named Kentucky. It's an honorary title."
Wow. So I grew up in Germany. I don't know if I had mentioned that to you. And I only infrequently came to the States as a kid. And we'd always fly into MacGuire Air Base. And I always remember how shiny the US seemed. And I know and you've lived, a bazillion years overseas, only recently come back. I don't know why I thought the US seemed shiny, if it was neon signs or modern buildings, but shiny. How did the States seem to you when you came back from your tours overseas? I mean, what's the first word you would think?
Overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
So, we would during the 18 years that we spent overseas back to back, we would come home like once a year. And it was always just such a like a gut punch as soon as we would step off the plane. And even just getting into the immigration line to get through customs to get back into the States. So it was always just, like I said, it's overwhelming. At the end of those 18 years, when we received our orders to come back to California, to Monterey, we went through a huge questioning period, because even though we've been Americans for America for so long, and to everybody in the outside world that's not American, we are America, because that's what we were. We were trained to represent the United States. When you don't live in your home culture for a long time, you forget exactly what it's like. And so we were concerned about what it would be like to move back home, and what was coming, and we aren't the Americans that we were 18 years ago. So we get on a plane in Naples at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's hot and everything. And they put us in the wonderful international travel that we have these days. They put us on that plane, and we're in the middle row, and then they close all the windows and make it dark so people can sleep for the rest of the day. And we travel, and then we arrive in America, and the windows open, and we get off the plane, and we had to transit through Newark International Airport, which is chaos. And we get off the plane, and I think this is just it's kind of a, it's typical for every step along the way as we've moved back. It was just like getting, like walking into a wall, getting slapped in the face with the shine, like you said, the shininess of America, the noise, the everything just at your fingertips. It was a lot to adjust to. It still is a lot to adjust to. We came back in July of 2022. Every day is still an adjustment for us living in the United States again. And a friend of mine said, the saying goes that if you live outside your culture, for every year that you're outside your culture, you need a year to adjust again. So I am happy to say that I'll probably be like 68 years old by the time
You finally
that I'm fully adjusted to living in the United States again.
Well, a lot of the military brats on the different Facebook groups that I belong to, they still feel like they don't really have a home. They don't really know. And I mean, we could do a whole nother podcast on just, feeling like that, but we're running kind of out of time here.
Okay.
Okay, I'm glad I wasn't imagining that shiny. Okay, good.
You're no, that was not your imagination.
So on your website, I read you do some freelance writing for Military Spouse magazine and then also for Legacy magazine. And I've never heard of Legacy magazine, so I'd love to hear more about it. Is it a print magazine? Where can people read it?
Oh gosh. Legacy Magazine, oh my goodness. They were really one of the first military oriented magazines that I got involved with when I started writing full time. They are a tremendous magazine that is designed for the military community, military spouses, and first responders, and really deep dive into the things that impact us, especially as the spouses of those of that community. They are tremendous. They have it's print and online, and so I believe it's legacymagazine.org, but you can double check on that. If you go to my website, there's links to articles that I've written
That's
for
where
them.
I saw it. So I clicked on, I thought this is like really amazing, but I had never
Oh,
heard of it. So, okay.
they are phenomenal.
Well, I'll put the links to your website in the book and the Legacy magazine down underneath the podcast so our listeners can find the information quickly. So we only have a few minutes. I mean, this conversation could go on for months. I just know, I mean, I could be here all evening. We only have a few minutes left. And so for Host Nation Hospitality, the podcast, I'd like to ask you a bunch of questions really quickly, like a game, and only give one
Okay.
answer, maybe two. But no overthinking. Ready?
Okay.
Okay. Of all your assignments, which was your favorite and why?
I can't say that. It's like saying if you have a favorite child.
Oh, boo. All right. Most
Sorry.
most photographic event you've attended.
National Day at the Presidential Palace in Yaounde, Cameroon.
Okay. Most unique mode of travel you've taken.
Hand carved dugout canoe on a river in Cameroon.
Most interesting food you've tried?
Porcupine.
Wow, I'm going to come back to that question. Favorite museum?
Oh gosh, hands down. Musée d'Orsay in Paris.
Okay. If someone says to you they'd like to take a trip to Africa, where would you recommend they visit and why?
The Dakar, Senegal. It's amazing, amazing city with so much history and kind of encompasses so many aspects of the African continent.
Okay. Getting back to porcupine, what did it taste like? Don't say chicken.
It tasted like pork.
Okay.
I'm serious. I know that sounds, oh my gosh, it sounds like a joke, but it does. It's kind of sweet.
Okay. Well, I have never tried porcupine. I think the most exotic thing I've eaten is alligator, which to me tastes like fluffy fish. So
Yeah, I had porcupine when we were living in Cameroon, and yeah, I was not prepared for it, but no, it was actually really good.
okay. So is there anything you'd like to add to this conversation that I didn't ask? Like new projects or anything?
Oh gosh. Well, no, I'm a full-time writer and I'm working on the follow-up to Dispatches from the Cowgirl because there's still a story to be told about somebody who's lived outside of their culture for that long, but as a representational American. So I'm
Right.
working on that. I'm co-authoring another memoir with a dear friend about growing up and surviving the killing fields. So
Ooh.
that's what keeps me occupied.
Well, you're going to have a very busy couple of years, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely so.
Well, this has been a really nice conversation, and I wanted to thank you for coming on the podcast and thank Karen for introducing us. I appreciate it. As always, I'd like our listeners to know that this podcast is brought to you by the Museum of the American Military Family and Learning Center. The museum's podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brat Seal and Military Brats Registry. And I want to thank our guest, Julie Tully, author of Dispatches from the Cowgirl, for coming on. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Cersei. It was my pleasure.
Well, it's been great.